I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Just ahead, you talk back to us about the stories that moved you this week. And some of you have even been brave enough to make your New Year's resolutions public. We'll have that conversation in just a few minutes. But first, our weekly Faith Matters conversation, where we talk about matters of faith and spirituality. 2008 was a year where there was no shortage of things to talk about, from the Pope's visit to controversies surrounding the spiritual leaders of the presidential candidates to the battle over gay marriage and poor working conditions in a kosher food plant. We decided it made sense to look back at just a few of the most important stories touching on matters of faith over the past year. So we've called Salim Muakil, senior editor of In These Times magazine, and Michael Sean Winters, who blogs for America, a Catholic weekly magazine. Welcome to you both. Thank you so much for speaking with us. And Happy New Year.
Glad to be here.
Happy New Year, Michelle.
Michael, in just a few days, the Bush administration comes to an end. And this is an administration that has been, I think, strongly identified with matters of faith as kind of a governing principle, at least the president. President George W. Bush, very vocal about his faith and the way in which his faith has affected his governance. What do you think this administration's legacy on matters of faith will be?
Well, I think, you know, the number one outcome of the election was that it didn't work, is that it turns out even evangelicals and conservative Catholics or moderate to conservative Catholics have 401ks. And he had no plan of action for the number one issue in America. And I think one of the things the media tended to get wrong was they said, you know, moral issues got pushed aside and the economy took center stage. And what the reality is the economy is a moral issue. Hmm. And Barack Obama was able very effectively to address that. You know, providing for your family and it is a moral concern, and it requires self-discipline and a certain amount of self-denial and things like that. And that's the kind of issue that George Bush was just tone deaf on.
Hmm. Interesting. Salim, what about you? What's your take on that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that by narrowing the religious impulse to a certain political configuration, you know, the Republican Party, the party of religion, I think that people began to look beyond that, that when they realized that these other issues were actually important, were impinging on what they considered their religious faith, and they understood that it had a wider dimension than simply traditional concerns of gay marriage, guns, and all of that. You know, the traditional areas of evangelical concern were seen to be much broader, and I think that forced the religious community to look beyond political parties.
But Michael, was it in part though because Barack Obama as a candidate was successful in reframing the way these issues were discussed? Was it, I'm wondering, what's the chicken and what's the egg here? Was it a broader cultural impulse to reframe these issues as moral and ethical questions? Or was it that you had a political entrepreneur, as it were, in the form of a Barack Obama, who reframed the conversation?
I think a little of both. I think there you see within the religious community after 8 years of George W. Bush a sense that they really were taken for granted and that there were some internal contradictions. How can you be pro-life while pursuing such a militaristic foreign policy, by way of example? And I think Barack picked that up, understood that the Democratic Party in its most recent nominees had tone-deaf people when it came to religious concerns. And so he kind of rode a wave that was already there and is still planning on riding that wave.
But speaking of tone-deaf, let's talk about the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, if I can use that as a segue. What do you think the significance of that story is, Michael? And of course, Salim, I'll come to you too. But mm-hmm. Is that a story about politics? Is that a story about race? Is it a story about faith? What do you think that story means, looking back on it, now that we're away from kind of the heat of a contested political race?
I think the immediate religious significance is that if you're in a pulpit and you say something that others perceive as outrageous or crazy, you don't get a pass just because you're in the pulpit. And, you know, Jerry Falwell would get that pass. And here, both on the left and on the right, Jeremiah Wright, but also John Hagee, were both thrown under the bus without any significant consequence for the political politicians who were doing the throwing under the bus. And I think that's a good thing for religion, that you're not protected by the pulpit from saying extreme things. If you're sending out your sermons on DVDs, you're responsible for what you say.
Interesting. Salim, what's your take?
Well, I agree with that, in fact. But I think also what it did was acquainted much of America to a branch, a stream of theology that really wasn't in the public realm before, and that's liberation, black liberation theology. And what Reverend Wright, the intensity of his sermon, the histrionics and all of it, I think was in many ways odd to a lot of Americans. It was really the first time that they had exposure to that. And in that sense, I think it widened our understanding of how religion responds to various communities in this country.
Well, what do you agree with Michael's point, though, that in a way that we set a new boundary for what's acceptable public discourse, whether it's religious speech or not?
I really don't think so. I think the focus of this campaign heightened the significance of those kinds of speeches, but I don't think it will change any of the sermons that are being produced on DVDs around this country. I think the intensity and the sectarianism will still be a part of whatever is there.
Speaking of intensity, and we're skipping around a bit because there are so many stories that we would want to talk about this year, and we do want to talk about the Pope's visit. We also want to talk about some important religious figures who passed on this year, but we want to save some time for that. But speaking of intensity, we just cannot not talk about this whole controversy over Proposition 8, California's law, an initiative on the ballot that overturned a court ruling that had allowed gay marriage. So now this will no longer be allowed. And it became an issue that it was a story in the political realm and also involving religious figures. The Reverend Pastor Rick Warren, who of Saddleback Church, a major figure, a writer, has been asked to offer the invocation at the inauguration. This is a hugely controversial issue. What do we make of this story? And Michael, is this about politics? Is this about faith? Is this about a boundary of what is acceptable and what can be said by a person who's a religious figure? Because I think that Pastor Warren and those who agree with him on this point would say it is their job to speak the truth as they understand it, whatever the consequences politically may be.
Oh, and I think Pastor Warren would say that in encouraging people not to pursue a gay lifestyle, he is actually trying to help them. Now, I think he's wrong on that, but that's his belief. And some of the things he said were over the line. He's actually apologized and retracted. I do think that the intent of the president-elect was to continue reaching out to the evangelical community, even though they did not back him in the election in significantly larger numbers than they had supported Kerry. You did see a shift in attitudes. You did see a broadening of their concerns to include the environment and some non-traditional issues. And I think he's trying to speak to that. And Rick Warren is that face of the evangelical movement that is open to a more complicated view of the role of the church in the world.
Salim, what is your take on this?
Well, I think aside from some initial protests and expressions of outrage from various communities, I don't think Barack Obama really has much to lose by inviting such a controversial figure like Rick Warren. I think he has much to gain. His whole notion is that this is a time of reconciliation. And if we can't reconcile with those religious figures who we hold distinctly opposite opinions of certain issues about, if we can't do that, then we can't reconcile anything. And so I think his point is being emphasized by his choice of the invocation speaker.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with religion writers Michael Sean Winters and Salim Mouakil about the top faith stories of 2008. Of course, a huge story was the Pope's visit early in 2008. What do you think the impact of Pope Benedict XVI's visit to the U.S. was, Michael Sean? It was a huge story at the time, but we're not talking about it very much now.
Well, it depends on who the we is.
Sure.
In the Catholic
Absolutely.
Community, it's still,
well
it's
said.
Still,
well
it's still
said.
A very, very big issue.
That's the kind of thing I would normally have said, so I thank you for that correction.
He you know, the thing about the Pope is, you know, he had this long history as a cardinal in charge of enforcing orthodoxy and earned the sobriquet the De Panza Cardinal. And I think some people, especially conservative Catholics, were hoping that is who would show up on our shores. And in fact, there was no finger wagging. There was no communion denying to pro-choice politicians. Nancy Pelosi, John Kerry both received communion at his mass here in Washington. There was a great deal of encouragement. I went to one of the events at Catholic University where, again, a chance where the Pope could have, you know, laid down the law and, in fact, was very encouraging of the work of the Catholic educators. I thought it was just an extraordinary visit and really showed him as a pastor. My hope is that some of the American bishops will look at that and realize that in this election cycle, some of them, especially toward the end, really were finger-wagging, say, you can't vote for Barack Obama because of his pro-choice politics. And that was so not what Benedict had done. I think the more moderate bishops will start pointing to the Pope as an example and saying, you know, that this is the way forward. And in the Catholic Church with its hierarchic structure, the example of the Pope is a pretty good trump card.
What I'm hearing you say is kind of the message, overall message of the year was moderation, that moderation kind of ruled the day in religious conversation.
And reasonableness.
Reasonableness.
I mean, you know, I mean, it, not moderation for the sake of moderation, but because, you know, these how you approach the abortion issue was a complicated issue.
Suddenly, another story that caught our eye, and I'm rushing you along here, of course, I'm sorry, there's so much ground to cover, was another story that caught our eye was out of Postville, Iowa, where the owners of a kosher meatpacking facility were arrested for employing undocumented workers and exploiting them, hiring underage workers and so forth. This matter is still in the courts. But this prompted a tremendous amount of discussion, both in secular circles and also in Orthodox and religious circles, about the nexus between kind of secular law and religious law. What do you think the fallout of this is?
Well, I mean, we see some of that fallout in the discussion of Madoff, the guy who enacted this grand Ponzi scheme. A lot of religious leaders are critical of him because of his corruption of Judaism from their perspective. And I think in some ways that's why there was such an outcry with the situation in Iowa. I want to just speak one thing about the Pope as well, Michelle, if I may.
Sure.
A lot of people were afraid that the Pope would kind of scuttle the ecumenical efforts that were made by the previous Pope, and he hasn't done that. Many people feared he would be a lot more sectarian in his Christianity and his Catholicism, and he hasn't been. He's been willing to outstretch and make gestures of outreach to Islamic communities, and that's been a very positive, I think, development.
Okay, and we only have about 2 minutes left, so unfortunately we're going to have to skip over some of the folks we wanted to acknowledge once again. People who we did acknowledge on the program earlier this year, Warith Din Muhammad died in September. He was a major figure in the Nation of Islam and brought it closer to traditional Islam. And of course, Bishop S.C. Daddy Madison died in April, and he was a major figure in the United House of Prayer. So I wanted to, in the time we have left, just a short amount of time, I wanted to ask each of you, looking forward to 2009, what do you think are the important religious stories or stories, matters of faith that will be looking to, Salim, and then Michael?
Well, you know, I think after Wallace Muhammad died, Louis Farrakhan made a gesture to open the Nation of Islam. This is really the last bastion of racial exclusivity in black Islam in this country, and I think it was a major development, which hasn't been acknowledged, I think, in mainstream media because of the kind of quiet and secretive nature of the Nation of Islam, but I think it's extremely important and will have ramifying effects.
Michael?
Yeah, I think the Iowa situation you just mentioned is a great opportunity for Obama to go in and say, look, you know, resolving the immigration issue is not just a political necessity, it's a religious necessity. We do not want the U.S. government going in and separating parents from their families. That was outrageous. And I think if he frames that as a moral issue, again, it will help expand that universe of moral concerns in the political arena that we're already seeing, that we're already mentioning in terms of Rick Warren and the environment and things like that. I think this is a very pressing moral issue.
Michael Sean Winters writes a daily political blog for the Catholic Weekly magazine America. He's also the author of a new book, Left at the Altar. And he was kind enough to join us here in our Washington, D.C. studio. Salim Muwakkil is the senior editor of In These Times magazine. He joined us from Chicago. I thank you both so much and Happy New Year to you.
Great to be here.
Thank you, Michelle. Same to you.